Hello, everyone. I'm Dominique.
And I'm Christina, and we are the Connected in Glass podcast.
Every week, we will feature interviews with glass artists who speak to their creative processes and overcoming challenges.
These conversations are real and raw. We hope that by sharing these stories, you're able to find some connection and know that you're not alone. Today, we're interviewing Sandy Dukeshire. Sandy is a glass artist from Andover, Massachusetts, who started working with stained glass in 1993 and over time has transitioned to working with hot glass.
Thanks for being here with us, Sandy.
Thank you for having me.
So first, we like to begin by just giving our virtual audience a brief overview of yourself. Can you tell us about you, where you live, what you enjoy, and kind of work into how you got into glass? So give us the background besides glass for the start.
Okay, well, I live in Andover, Massachusetts. I've been here about 40 years now. I live in a house with my husband that we built from scratch, which was a lot of fun. We built it ourselves. And it took us about a year. We moved in with the house unfinished. Then I, had a baby. Then I had another baby. And eventually, a third daughter came along. So I spent a lot of time when I was young just being a mom, which was great. I loved it. I was the earth mother. We had the big gardens. Everyone was barefoot all summer. We all frolicked in the yard. It was wonderful. I loved it. And then I guess as a young girl, my mother taught me everything. You know how your friends called you crafty and everything? Well, I considered myself an artist. It was very lofty of me, I thought, at a young age, like 12 or 13 years old. And but I could do it all because my mom did. You know, we painted, we did macrame, we did ceramics, we knit, we did sewing, we did quilting. You know, you name it. We made beads. We did everything, not glass beads, but, any other kind of beads. So I had a strong background in crafting. And, that was my mom to thank for it. And I really loved it. And those developmental years were really heavily influenced by crafting and living in the country. I was lucky. I had horses. I had a horse and a pony. So after school every day was up in the barn. We didn't have internet. We went up and shoveled manure and groomed the horses. And it was great. We were outside every day till after dark. It was a great way to grow up. We had lots of friends. The horse, we had a sleigh, and the pony, we had a sulky for in the summer. So just imagine, being 14 years old with a couple of your friends and you're out riding the power lines in a sleigh in December. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. We had a blast, and we'd be miles from home. Now, I don't think I would let my kids do that now. I look back and I'm like, I don't know if I'd want my kids out miles from home with a horse out on some power lines, but we did it. We had a great time. And, you establish your lifelong friendships when you do things like that. So long days outside, it was great. So I think right now I'm inspired by nature because I spent so much time in it, and there was a lot of antiques around us, the arts and crafts and Art Nouveau, always my favorite, and still to this day, love it all, And then by middle school, I was crafting a lot then too. I made macrame necklaces with lots of beads and I sold them. And that's when the craft tables were $5. You could rent a table up at the church for $5 and I'd sell my necklaces there. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good experience. It was a great way to do some business and make some money, that and babysitting. What are you going to do? And then in high school, I started taking drafting classes because I was pretty good with my hands and I liked it. And I understood mechanical engineering. It all came very easily to me. But then halfway through my junior year, we moved, and being in high school and being with all those kids, it was tragic. I had to leave all my friends and get put in a new school. The credits were very different in the new school. So I had more than enough credits to graduate, but I still needed that fourth year of gym, fourth year of English, and a fourth year of social studies. So my schedule was ridiculous. It was like study hall, lunch, study hall. So I was already really good at the drafting because I already had a year of it under my belt. And I went into this class and it was all the senior boys. And to me, they seemed like a bunch of knuckleheads. They were so far behind. But it was to my advantage because guess what I did in my study hall, lunch, study hall? I did all their homework, you know? That was pretty intuitive of me just to get it done. So I'd be out in the parking lot and they'd pay me $5 a piece. And I'd draw their detailed drawings. And so, you know, talk about male-dominated world. I started young, I guess. So I was okay with that. And I was pretty comfortable with it. And the boys were pretty comfortable with it. They got all their homework done. I just wonder if the teacher ever caught on that all the homeworks looked the same. And suddenly they were getting it done. So that inspired me really to work for myself. There was more money selling homework than my part-time job. You know, I had a lot of time on my hands then because my senior year, I only went to school for a half a day. So I worked at Burger King part-time on the weekends, and I worked at American Power Devices full-time from 3 to 11 all through my senior year, running the tape and reel machine, magnetizing diodes. It was about the most boring thing in the world, but, you know, I don't know, I think it paid like $11 an hour, so I was pretty happy with that. So yeah, after I sold all that stuff to the boys, that was great. I made a lot of money there. Let's see, I bought my first car. I had a 68 Mustang. And I guess that carried over from the pony thing, liking my horses all the time. So, you know, I think being really busy and being motivated to work and being motivated for my own gas money, because my parents would never buy me a car. They always said, if you want a car, you have to go buy it yourself. So it was kind of those vicious circles, like, how are you going to get to work if you don't have a car? And how are you going to earn the money if you don't have a job? So, you know, that took a little bit of fiddling around at first, but, you know, you figure it out. So at first I was a little mad at my dad about that, but now I appreciate it. So, you know, it kind of taught me a lot of good lessons, you know. So through this all, glass, you know, always held a fascination. Whenever I'd go to church with my friends or something, we'd look and just all the colors and the windows is just so beautiful. Just really, really, really captured my heart, you know. And I always wanted to do something with glass. But like I said, I had my girls very young. So, you know, I was always a mom first. So after my girls were all in school, I took a stained glass class locally here at the community class. And the teacher was offering to make us these or help us make these 3-piece sailboats. I'm like, no, I want to make a 50-piece window. And, you know, I was one of those students. But I did. I made it. I still have it. It's still hanging up. It's beautiful. And I really, really loved stained glass. And so I started taking a couple more classes here and there. I took one down the Museum of Fine Arts, an advanced stained glass class. And by then I was making windows locally for different shops and selling them. I had an antique shop at the time, so sold a lot of my glass to the antique store there too. And then someone gave me a kiln and I started introducing dimensional work into my stained glass work. And, you know, that put a nice edge into a lot of the pieces I made. And I also taught classes at the Tewksbury Senior Center and at the Essex Art Center here in Lawrence. And through the Senior Center, they were doing a renovation project. And Bill Sterling was the architect for that. And, you know, meeting him and helping him design the new craft room and the new building and whatnot, you know, he noticed my ability in the stained glass and pulled me aside one day and said, hey, I'm doing a job in Boston and it's going to be for the Jesuit chapel on Newbury Street. What do you think? You know, so I'm like, yeah, sure. I think I'll do that. So I went down and I looked at it and priced it out and got the job. And that was really a springboard for me. That was like the job that put me right over the edge because I was able then to afford to build the hot shop. I really wanted to blow glass, but the place where I was working kind of closed up, left town. I didn't know what to do. There was no furnace nearby that I knew about. So I thought I'm just going to build a little studio in the backyard. And, you know, that job working with Bill and on Newbury Street really, really popped that forward for me. It was really a nice job to do that. And you know, and then I was able to build the whole studio right in the backyard. We did shop for a place. We looked and looked and looked and looked to rent a building, and it just wasn't going to come together anyway. So I think because I am kind of a homebody, it really made sense just to work at home and build the studio there. So that's what we did. And it's really turned out to be incredibly handy. You know, the commute is great. I can work when I want. I can work when I don't have to work, when I don't want to. But it's there when I need it. I can do stained glass, fused glass, glass blowing, you know, whatever I want. And I can plan my work around the seasons, which is nice because I don't consider glass blowing a summer sport. So if I can do my stained glass windows over the summer and then blow glass in the winter. And then I used to teach weekend workshops here, but you know, with COVID, that's not happening either. So a lot of gigs got canceled. It's been a rough year for everybody, I know. So, you know, we're all just trying to roll with that, I suppose. What are you going to do?
That was really beautiful. I have to chuckle about your joke about the commute being really great. So can you verbalize your studio a little bit? It's like a stone's throw away from your beautiful back deck, right? But you have a small space and it completely becomes a different workshop depending on what you're working on. Can you kind of describe that to everyone? I know Christina hasn't gotten the pleasure of being there quite yet.
Sure. Yeah. The footprint inside is very small. It's a 12 by 16 area on the inside. And there is a 4 by 16 overhang roof in the front, which we utilize in the warmer weather. There's a set of barn doors which open up under that. And then what we call a people door on the side. So it's definitely glass blowing for like one or two or even three people if you know where to stand. It's not big by any means. So the equipment is small as well. I have a 15-inch glory hole, an electric furnace that it does hold 80 pounds of glass. So, I mean, that's a respectable amount. If I had it to do over again, I would have got a 40-pound. I really don't need 80 pounds of glass at once out there. And if I do, I'll just charge again. So, I mean, if I had it to do over, or if somebody were to ask me, you know, the best size for your backyard, I'd say 40 pounds will do it. You know, you don't really need to run that big pot out there. And then I have a front loading kiln. That's like a little refrigerator. I just recently got that. Well, a couple of years ago. And that's really nice for loading the work into without having to take that deep dive. I had an old pottery kiln. So it was a top loader. So when you open the lid, all that heat would just like burn your armpits. So it's really nice to have this new little front loader in there. And I have a little kiln that I keep underneath it, and that's the pickup kiln. A lot of my work is component driven. I'll sculpt the little objects first and put them in the little pickup kiln and keep them at temperature and then blow the work. And then when we're ready to pick the pieces out of the little kiln, pickup kiln, pick them up, put them on. But you usually ramp it up another 100 degrees or so to get a little extra heat in there. And that's not something you'd want to do in the annealer. If you have work in there, you don't want to be fluctuating your temperature. So I have a little kiln for that. And there's a nice bench. I have all the tools for the glass blowing, and that's what I'm doing now. You know, when spring comes and we shut down for glass blowing, I'll tuck everything away and pull out the torch and do some lamp working. By then, if I've stacked up a couple of stained glass jobs, I might do that. Depending on what I have for work at the time, is I just kind of work around it. And my customers are really great. You know, they'll say, hey, I want a window. And I'll say, hey, I'll do it next July. And they're like, okay. So, you know, because they understand if they want what they want and they want me to make it, then they don't mind waiting. And that's really sweet of them too. So it really does work out for everybody.
So can you describe both your style of work a little bit more? It's mostly component driven, you said, but also can you describe how you do it? I know that most of the time you work alone, which I think is quite impressive.
Well, I do work alone, and you know, that is a lesson in perseverance, I will say. You know, it wasn't without a lot of disappointments. You know, it's very difficult working alone. It really does press it right up against the line there sometimes, because I think the work I'm trying to do is generally, you know, a teamwork type of thing, you know, so trying to do the jobs of two people can sometimes be overwhelming. You know, I can do it as long as nobody's trying to talk to me. If somebody comes in, like my poor husband will say, "Hey, how you doing?" I'm like, boom, don't talk to me now. You know, it's like, you just can't think. It's the intense amount of focus that you need anyway. And then you're trying to do it yourself. It's like, forget about it, you know? But, I enjoy that. I enjoy pushing the limits. I think that's what really, I spend most of my time on, quite frankly, when I'm out there by myself all the time, experimenting a lot of times just to see if I can do it, you know, being self-taught. I haven't been in a lot of studios. I haven't been under anybody's wing, you know, so there's been a lot going on out there. I probably did a lot of things the wrong way. And I'm sure now I do things my way that I am totally comfortable with that would absolutely horrify a regular person in a regular studio, because they're going to be like, what is she doing? But for me, it just came naturally, and that might be the move I do. Maybe I lift the pipe over my head and swing it around a little funny like a baton. But when you're working in a 12 by 16 foot studio, sometimes that's what you got to do, you know, so you got to get in the habit. And I don't think anything of it when I go somewhere else. So it's nice to work with other people once in a while, because working alone, it is a great thing, and I don't mind doing it, but it gets lonely. You know, working alone is good, but it does get lonely. So it's nice to get out once in a while, see everyone, you know?
Totally. So if we could describe most of the work that you do in the hot shop, when we say component driven, usually it is scenes from nature, often flowers. And so you spend hours and hours and hours making all these different flower and leaf parts, and they are all very, very intricate and precise. And then she puts them in that little box that she was talking about and ramps them up well over 1,000 degrees. Then she'll blow a vessel like a vase and slowly and tediously put all those delicate parts onto the vessel. So it's very, very complex and beautiful. Yeah.
Well, and most of the components are solid sculpted, you know, so I can just pretty much do bit work when I'm working by myself. And that's not hard. That is actually enjoyable. And it doesn't use a lot of glass. It doesn't use a lot of color, but it does use a lot of time at the glory hole. You know, and you're in there by yourself taking all the heats. It's a little much, but it's necessary. You know, you have to get all these little things done and be super, super detailed orientated, I think, to look at things. I could make 20 flowers and easily discard half of them, you know. And then after that, you know, just, I like to lay them out and look at them. I want to take my time. I figure I have so much time into it already. Why not take one more day, lay them all out, make the arrangement. So when I put them in the kiln to pick them out, I know exactly where they're going to go, with a couple of backups on the side in case I drop one or something like that. But very organized, very detailed. I have a map. I map everything out. I map out the color, the progress, the techniques, the order of operations, what goes on first, what goes on second, when to draw the stringers on, when to put the flowers on, what leaf goes under which flower gets two leaves, which flower gets three leaves. You know, it's, and when I'm putting it all together, you would never know, but it's an orchestrated event. There is nothing left to chance when I put one of these things together. It's all very well thought out. And in that case, I think what happens too, you also get very, very critical of yourself too, because if it doesn't come out exactly the way you have it in your head, I mean, I'm putting it in the box and I'm saying, well, that leaf could have been a little higher, or that flower I should lift up a little more, you know, and I'm already making it better in my head as I'm putting it away. And it's all a learning experience. So what if the flower isn't leaning up toward the sun, it's looking down at the ground? Oops, next time do it the other way, you know, and make a note. Don't forget, take that last heat. Look at it, you know, have your assistant, if you have an assistant, hold it right up so you can look at it. So it looks like it's sitting on the table and you can get that different vantage point. You know, there's all those little things that that matter when you're building a piece that you don't really think about. It's just the angle of the view. You need to see it all different ways before you put it away. It all matters. You know, I look at the connection point when I put the components onto the piece. I used to just get it hot and stick it on. And then there was this big kind of a blob of glass behind it. It looked like a bit, but it wasn't a bit, but it was still a blob. It was ugly. I didn't like it, you know? So I started even going the extra step to take the components, and I'll even put them on the lap wheel and grind them down to the angle I want them sitting on the piece, you know? So when I put them on, they go on clean. They look nice. It's seamless and it looks beautiful, you know? And that's the little tiny details I think, you know, matter. I look at all that stuff and I see everything, and I, you know, I want it to look a certain way. And so, you know, you're always striving to do it a little better. And yeah, otherwise what else would you do? You know, you always want to make it better, right?
Definitely. So I really love how you work things out. I've had the pleasure of working with you a few times, and you're so right. You come up with your design and then you come up with all the different steps that we're going to take to go through it. So it makes it really easy to assist you because the plan is right in front of us. And most of your inspiration, if I'm wrong, you said comes from nature, and the way that you work out the process is through these drawings and through this mapping out, correct?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool.
Everything is mapped out. Yep. I usually even, like I was getting ready to do that big gig up at Corning, which of course got trashed because of COVID, but I mean, I worked for 4 months prepping for a weekend. So that can give you an idea of how much time it takes to build a large piece that, you know, that I'm going to make. You know, there were several pieces involved in that, but needless to say, each of them were, you know, had more. If I'm working by myself, I might put 5 to 10 components on at the most with some stringer drawing, because after that, it just gets, you're asking for trouble, you know, just stick it on and put it in the box. Done, you know. But if I'm working with a team and I've got somebody to help me out, there's no reason you can't decorate that thing all the way around with all the I can go all day, you know. Once you get in that rhythm, you just keep putting it on and you can dress it up, and that was the plan. So I have boxes and boxes of stuff ready to go that have, you know, the drawing, the color, the scale, all the components, where they're going to go, the plan of the order of operation, right down to everything. Even the color is in the box, so for making the piece. And I'm still going to keep that all packed away, because I'm hoping someday, maybe when this all blows over, we'll be able to revisit that, you know. So in the meantime, it's still compatible with the glass I melt here. So if I ever get impatient, I suppose I could always just bust out a box and, you know, make a piece or something, just downscale it to fit my equipment. Of course, it wouldn't be the same size I had planned, but it's an option, you know. But you got to be careful with component work too, Dom. You know, like I make a lot of components, and I just cleaned my studio out this summer over lockdown. And the stuff I threw away was amazing. And a lot of it's just because I've come so far, I don't need to save this anymore. Why am I saving? Get rid of it. But it's also like the original nuggets from Spectrum. Nobody uses that anymore. It gets obsolete. So, you know, and the way the cullet, what we melt in the furnace, and we buy it in 50-pound bags that looks like ice cubes, sort of, and we melt it, and it comes from different companies, and they're not always compatible with each other. And through the years, different companies have different glass. And so, you know, like everybody's melting this. And then 2 years later, no, we're not melting that anymore. Now we're melting this. But all those components you made, yeah, they're not going to work anymore. You know, so I've kind of gotten out of the habit of getting too far ahead of myself. You know, there's something to be said for that. So, yeah.
Definitely. You live a really creative life. I like to follow you on Instagram, and I'll make sure to mention that at the end of the episode. But you're always doing a different glass project or a different like wool and fiber projects. Do you ever find that you're not inspired, or do you ever find that you're in a slump? And if you ever find yourself in a place where you're not feeling creative, how do you get out of that?
You know, I think I avoid that pretty easily by writing it down. Okay. I get inspired often. It's like the minute I wake up in the morning. I don't know why, but when I wake up, something will just come to me. It's like lightning strikes. And it could be a fiber project, a glass project, or something I've been struggling with. I don't know. Or just maybe a new idea. It's like, hey, I've never seen anybody do that before. Write it down. You know why? Because those are fleeting moments. They will come in your head and be gone because your phone will ring. You'll get a text. Something will happen. Someone will talk to you and it's gone and forgotten about. So you need to really kind of make it a habit to write that stuff down. Write it down. And then someday when you don't really know what to do, you know, you got that book, you can pull it out and you're like, oh my God, I forgot all about that. Yeah, this is a great idea. And what if I do this? And maybe I can do it that way, you know? And then you'll always have a nice list of ideas that are original to yourself, you know? And then that's going to give you that chance to do that exploration. You know, it's not like, what am I going to do today? You know, it's like when I lit up my studio this time, I had no problem knowing exactly what I was going to do. I already had five or six little projects that I wanted to, things I wanted to try and explore. Maybe they didn't work out. I spent a couple of days just messing stuff up, but you know what? It's working now. Now I can do it. So, you know, you just have to kind of stick with what you want to do. And I don't think you're going to get stuck then, you know, and if you have multiple things to do, that's the other thing. I think we should all have multiple irons in the fire. That's a great way to beat getting stuck. You know, if you're not having fun with glass right now, for whatever reason, you know, say I went out there yesterday and broke everything and the glass gods are mad at me and I don't really want to go back out there today. Maybe I'll come in and do some weaving or something, or do some spinning on a spinning wheel or something a little more gentle to myself so I don't go out there and beat myself up, you know? And then you can kind of think about it. You have that quiet time and you can work through the problem in your head. And then it comes to you, maybe, you know, you need to take another look, step back. You know, when you're getting stuck, what are you getting stuck on and why? And what are you trying to accomplish? And can you accomplish it by doing what you're doing and staying on that path? Or maybe it's time to take the fork in the road. You know, you need time. You got to give yourself time. Self-love, be kind to yourself and give yourself the time to think about that. You know, that's investing in yourself, Dawn. I think it's super, super important to invest in yourself. And then you're not going to get stuck. You're going to have time that you've given yourself. That's probably the most important commodity because you never get that back. The materials that you're going to work with are really important. Like what makes you happy? What feels good in your hands? What makes you happy to look at once you've accomplished something, you know, and the time to practice it. And who cares if you make a mistake? You know, my dad, he always said, do something, Sandy, anything, even if it's wrong, just do it, you know, and that really stuck with me, you know, just do it. Who cares if you're not doing it right? You'll figure it out if it's something you really want to do. And if it's not, you'll figure that out too. You know, take time to walk, meditate, you know, time to yourself. I think time is so important. And even if it's just to clean your room, do some laundry, you know, if it makes you feel down in the dumps because you're going around and your house has got a pile of laundry and the dishes are all in the sink and you kind of can't get out of your own way because you can't even get out of the house before you get into the studio, you know, maybe just take a day off and not go in the studio. Maybe just stay home and get your stuff done for a day. And then you can go out with a fresh start, you know. I know that's not always practical for everybody, but I think if you plan it in your day, you can carve out a little time for yourself. It doesn't have to be take a whole day off. I mean, that's pretty extravagant. Not everybody can do that. But if you can carve out some time for your day, every day for yourself to do something that's going to improve you in the head, you know, make you happy, then you really should do that. You know, it's almost an art of being kind to yourself. And that's a form of self-love, you know, and you have to love yourself. If you don't love yourself, it makes it impossible to love other people. And if you're going to love other people, then you better love yourself first. You know, I think that's super, super important, you know, and also I think when you get stuck, you need to maybe be a little well, I do. I won't give this advice to somebody, but for me, I have to be a little careful about my interactions with other people, be it on the internet or in person. I do live a solitary life for the most part, and my empathy level is pretty darn high. And, you know, we can only absorb so much, and there's so much negativity out in the world. And sometimes you just need to get away from that. And that also is a form of self-love. You give yourself that time away from all of that, and you don't fill your head with that kind of stuff, because your head should be a nice place to be. That, because that's you, you know, so you want to have what makes you happy.
That was so beautiful. If I could just take that and write a whole book about that, just that beautiful thing that you just said, it was really quite great.
Well, you know, Dawn, it's a truth. You know, I think honestly, you are what you manifest. You are, you know, if you work towards progress, you know, and just forget perfection. You can take perfection, just throw that right out the window. You know, perfection is so overrated. Do what makes you happy. Again, you know, these are your decisions and you need to make them count. Okay. Life is short and you can spend it being unhappy or miserable or just, you know, trying to solve the whole world's problems and taking on things that are bigger than yourself. You know, it's exhausting to me, you know, and there's only so much of that you can do. And after that, you know, then that's when you're going to invest in yourself again. You know, you never get your time back. So you really should really work toward what makes you happy. You know, I can't even stress it enough. You know, it, get outside a little bit, clear your head. Don't let the bad stuff get you down, you know?
Definitely. I just wanted to shift a little bit, but it's kind of along the same lines. When you're talking right now, I can hear the teacher in you and the way that you're passing off knowledge. And I was just wondering, we've asked a lot of people about the difference in the way they approach teaching versus working on their own. It's totally a different mindset and a different way to kind of look at when you're going into work to teach versus when you're going into work to create. And I was wondering if you could give us some insight on how you feel about that perspective.
Well, about going into the studio, I'll say, you know, it's either way you're going into work. You know, I mean, you have to show up for yourself. Even if it's a play and experimental day, you have to be ready, be present, be in the moment. And that holds true whether you're teaching or working in the studio for yourself. I don't know. I think that the teaching part of it is in a way it's a rush for me. I really like it. I like working with other people. I used to teach a lot of classes, mostly stained glass, fusing. We did stepping stone workshops. We did all kinds of crazy things, you know, at the art center when I worked there for years, and even at the senior center, you know, let me say this. If you run a program and you're printing out your program and you're mailing it out to 3,000 people at an art center, you know, and you're trying to get people to sign up for your classes, those places are always, always, always looking to expand their programs. Okay. So if you can think of something a little out of the box that's totally doable for them to host as a class, you need to get out there and make a proposal. And then you create your own work. And that's what I did for years. It was amazing. I could have been working, teaching 13 classes a week if I wanted to, if I wanted to be gone every single night of the week, you know, because I was really good at inventing things up and saying, hey, we haven't done this, let's try this. Or, hey, you can take all this glass and, you know, let's do something else with it a different way. Or even if it's a bracelet workshop or just something, anything, you know, so you can really kind of manifest your own income. You can manifest your own job. You can manifest your own teaching career, you know, and I taught tons and tons of classes like that. And entering the studio, I guess, getting back to your question, I don't really know, Dom. Like, what do? I go in there and I always have a plan. Again, it's just like working for myself. I have a plan. There's a schedule. You know, we have 4 weeks. We're going to do X, Y, Z, and then we're going to wrap it up on the last night, you know. And I think people appreciate that when they come into class. It's not like you're just like, oh, I don't even know where the ruler is. You know, it's terrible when you everything's all over the place, you know. So I'd go in early. I clean out my cabinet. I want to know where everything is because we only have 2.5 hours in there. My student comes to me and says, Sandy, I need a ruler. I want to be able to open the cabinet door and pull a ruler out and hand it to them, not have to say, oh, they used to be here. Let me go into the next classroom. Or the next classroom, you know, and you're spending 20 minutes looking for one ruler. It's crazy, you know. So being organized is super important in class. Having a plan, having expectations, and hopefully getting all your students there on time. Because the worst thing for me is when somebody strolls in 20 minutes late and you got to repeat it all over again. So, you know, but that happens and you have to handle that with grace and dignity and just be nice and smile and, you know, kind of make sure that that doesn't happen again, maybe. But, you know, things do happen. What are you going to do? But I think being organized is super, super important, be it for my own work or for teaching. And I think the students appreciate that no matter where you're working, whatever art center you're working at, they're going to appreciate it too. Because, you know, art studios and public buildings tend to get a lot of use, you know. You can bring something in and it'll look great. And you can go back next week and it looks like World War III, you know, and there's your sign right there that says do not stack, but you got to move everything off the top of it to see the sign because everybody stacked on top of the sign that said don't stack on top of the kiln. You know, it's almost like a war zone, especially when, you know, you've got oodles and oodles and oodles of little kids running around. They can't help themselves, you know, but that's just the nature of the beast when, you know, when you have multi-generational art centers, things happen, you know, so you kind of have to be on top of it. But it is a great experience. I want to be where I am now. You make a lot of contacts out there. You meet a lot of artists. You know, the faculty shows are great. You get experience in all other mediums. Usually places like that let you take other classes, either free or on the cheap. You know, and if you don't take advantage of that, shame on you. Go take it, experience something else. Take a class that you would never do. You know, I took RecCo once just because I wanted to throw a bunch of ceramics into a fire. You know, it sounded like great fun. So, you know, I'd never done it before. But it was a nice experience. And I think the more irons you have in the fire and the more things that you can experience, that's all going to circle around. It's going to come back to you one way or another. You know, like when I did, here's a great example. Like when I was in high school doing all of my mechanical engineering, and I went to college for it too. Let's not forget that. But that gave me the ability to read a blueprint because I could draw them and I could draw them well. And I know exactly what I'm looking at when I look at a blueprint. And you know what? A lot of people don't know that about me. And what's really funny, I went to look at a job at a barn. The guy was doing some restoration work and they wanted some bullseye windows up for over the door, you know? So, and you know, and he was kind of impressed with himself and he's whipping around the blueprints on the back of the truck with his hard hat on. And, you know, here I am, I'm going to show you all of this, little girl. And I took one look at it and I'm like, but your windows are all in upside down. And you could have heard a pin drop, you know? He never thought in 100 years that I would have really known. He was just going to show me like where the windows were supposed to go. But, you know, it was nice to be able to read that and see the blueprint and see what's going on. And like when I did the job on Newberry Street, too, that was really great to be able to work with the architects. You know, it's nice to pull that out of your hat. You know, it's not like I sit around drafting blueprints all day anymore, but I can read one. And that's a great, great thing to have in my hat. You know, everybody should have a lot of irons in the fire. I think it's a skill set, you know, and if you can have a big skill set, that's going to give you the edge down the road. You know, don't ever count yourself short on that. If somebody says, hey, let's try something, do it, you know, try it. It might not be your thing, but you'll learn something.
I love that. So you've kind of touched on it a little bit here and there, but I really am curious about what your experience has been as a woman in so many male-dominated fields.
Yeah, that's really funny, huh? You know, I think I've been in a male-dominated field my whole life. So I don't feel super awkward about it. I mean, even as a little kid, I'd go to my cousin's house. They had 5 dirt bikes. You know, we were riding dirt bikes when we were 7 years old. You know, and how do I feel about it? I don't know. Even when I worked in the engineering, it was all male dominated. You know, it was not all, there were some women in there, but mostly, you know, the engineering and the drafting rooms, they were all men. And then of course that transferred over into the glass. Apparently it's, you know, pretty male dominated too. Of course, I didn't know that. I just wanted to blow glass, you know? So going into it, I had no idea, you know, I knew so little about what I was getting into when I got into it. Talk about naive. Like, I should have at least read a book or something. But no, it's just like I fell in love with that hot glass and I was going to do it no matter what. You know, you get that on your mind and you just can't get rid of it. So, you know, there were a couple of times, I mean, there's always that one or two little instance here or there, you know, and I think, you know, looking back at that, there was, you know, in particular, I did have one horrible instance and I got terribly yelled at for no good reason. And it was pretty shattering for me because, you know, I was just starting to learn about glass and meet a lot of the local people. And I thought, oh, I don't think I can jive with this. This is how it's going to be, you know, but it was just one bad thing. But, you know, and then I called somebody up the next day to tell them about it. And I was still choked up. Like I could barely even talk. I was like, how? I had to leave. I was so embarrassed, you know? And now looking back, I think what a jerk that guy is. You know, it's, you manifest what you are, you know, and as maybe he was just having a bad day and went off on me for the wrong reason. I don't know, you know, but you can't let other people's actions like that affect you. And I did, you know, and I used to, and it would bother me, but not anymore because I've learned the art of letting all that crap kind of just roll off my shoulders. You know, it's not me. I didn't yell at me. I asked a question. I said, why did you take that cane off and flip it over? That's all I wanted to know. He didn't have to go off on me. I wasn't interrupting. He was a jerk. So it wasn't me. So, you know, and if that were to happen to me now, I think I'd probably have something to say about it. At the time, I just left. I had to leave. You know, I couldn't even stay there anymore. So, you know, I think that comes with confidence or with age or with experience or maybe all three, you know, but, you know, I just wouldn't stand for that now. And I think maybe even now I wouldn't expect it from anybody, you know, maybe things are a little different now, hopefully. I'd be really shocked for anybody to treat somebody like that these days. And I don't experience it now. It seems like that that was just like one really weird thing that happened a long time ago. It's not like I've experienced it over and over and over again. And I've had this real big problem with men in the, you know, that's actually quite the opposite. I've found the glass community actually very, very wonderful. You know, there's, and if you find a bad apple, that's, well, let me tell you something, there's bad apples everywhere. You know, you can't go through life and find one thing where everybody's going to be perfect. You know, there's always going to be that no matter where you go. So, you know, given that, you know, you just kind of shrug it off. There really is an art to just letting it go. You know, if someone has to go off on you and give you a bunch of negative energy, then you just need to learn how to let that just kind of roll right down and say, okay, sorry, you're having a bad day, you know? And let it roll, you know, that there really is an art to that. And because as an empath, you know, that kind of thing can hit you pretty hard. And so, you know, you learn how to not take it anymore or don't let it affect you or don't absorb it. You know, that's the last thing you want to do is absorb somebody else's negative energy. So, you know, and then instantly forgive, you know. Somebody's going to go off on you and say, bop, 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 bop. Okay. You know, it's okay. It's okay. You want to go off on me? Okay. I get it. You know, look, you don't know what's going on in everybody's life. You don't know what's triggering them. You don't know what experience they might have had that makes them feel the way they feel. So it's just like taking the bolt cutters off and just let it go. Because if you drag that around, it's like a ball and chain, you know, and it's, if you can just instantly forgive somebody, then I call it the other F word. All right. You got the F word, and forgiveness is really the other F word, you know, and if you can learn the art again of instant forgiveness, it's not being a doormat. It's letting go of negativity instead of harboring it within yourself, because that's not healthy. You don't want to do that. So there you
go. Were you like born with able to manage things in this way, or do you think that it's something that you learned through time?
Oh, definitely a learned, it's life experiences, Dom. You know, I mean, instant forgiveness, that didn't come easy. You know, that's something, you know, you, when someone hurts you, maybe they don't mean to, but if you hold on to that hurt, you're not helping yourself. So, yeah, you need to learn how to just kind of let that go, and then you're better. Then you're going to be way better off for it, you know, because the worst thing anybody can do is fester, you know. And if you're going to sit around and fester all day about this and that, all of a sudden you're going right down the bad path. You don't want to do that. That's not great. That's not productive. You know, then you're going to be stuck. Then you're not going to want to make stuff, you know, and then your stuff that you make is going to reflect your angriness, you know, and if you want to make happy work, you know, it will reflect. If, even if you're having a really bad day and that stuff is bothering you, when you step into the studio to go create, then you have to leave it at the door, you know, check it out, check it at the door, and just let it go and go do what you need to do. And that alone is almost enough. So when you leave, it's no longer at your doorstep. You worked through it. It's gone. It blew away in the wind while you were busy doing something positive, you know? And I think that's also another form of kindness to yourself and self-love. You know, you have to be good to yourself. And if you can let things go, that's being good to yourself.
That was perfect. That was beautiful. Do you have any other questions, Christina?
I don't, but is there anything else that you wanted to say to everybody listening, Sandy?
Well, let me see. I would say in life, don't burn bridges. You know, you can walk away from things if you need to. But you know, don't burn your bridges. Try to keep it light. I think everybody needs it. And especially in this day and age, you know, and to be present, you know, when somebody is in need of your time for any reason, is you give them that full attention, you know, and I think you gain so much from that too. You know, and to be present for yourself. And I can't even say that enough. It's so, so, so important. And then practice it. You have to practice it. You know, it's easy to say. It's easy to say the words. Be present for yourself. Okay. But then, you know, when this is all over and we hang up and go about our day, are you? You have to practice it. You know, it's not easy. It's something you have to get in the habit of doing. And if you can get in the habit of doing it, it's going to reflect. It will so reflect in everything that you do. And you'll be happier because of it. Try it. Try it.
Words of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for all your time and for sharing all this. It was really special, and it was so nice to learn so much about you, and you definitely gave lots to think about.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad, Dawn.
Such an amazing mom, I just got to say.
You know, I'm like, wow, this would be such a nice mom talk right now.
Right? Oh, I can be your mom, Dom. I'll be the Dom mom. No, I love, you know, being a mom with my girls. You know what I love even more is being a grandmother. You know, I have 5 grandchildren now. And that is just the absolute best. It's so weird that your kids have kids, you know? And it's just so enjoyable. And now you can just play with them, you know? It's like, oh, it's great. I have these little kids. I can just play with them all the time and then send them home. Although not this year because of COVID, you know, oh God, I miss them so much. I can't wait for this to get over. So hopefully soon.
Well, thanks so much for your time, and I think we're
no
good.
Problem.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Connected in Glass. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram for more information on the artists we interview and for updates on the podcast.